You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at wearelibertarians.com.
No.
Hold on.
Screw it. We'll do it live.
You ever like make an appointment, you know, like shows up immediately. You sit here and you like Harry. You're like all frustrated, like boom, 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 boom.
I told you to be here, man.
Yeah, he's here. Yeah. Man. Anyways.
It's 9 o'clock, right?
Yeah. Rockstar Reinhold showing up here on part two of this episode of Loki Wall. Hi everybody, I'm Harry, aka Target, joined again with Reinhold, who's coming in like a rock star who decided to skip sound check because he's too good for it. Yeah, that's why you don't skip sound check, sir. So that's why you don't skip it. And then we also join with Vincent. Go ahead and say hi, Vincent.
Hi, Vincent.
All right, that's fine. That's an antique joke. That's very
yes. So yes, I know.
You got to be careful with those jokes. Yeah. Woo. Oh, we got someone who's like, yes, you get to catch it live. You're catching it live, and we're actually all here on time, back again. Look at us, we're riding again on time on a Monday night. Yeah, this feels good. It feels good. I feel like I personally feel like I'm going to get the swing of the things of doing things and being here on a Monday night to like record. It's just something like trying to get everything squunched into this seamless hour. It's going to be somewhat of a challenge for the first few times, but I figure if we can get it done and if we can get Reinhold to show up on time and put the beers down, you know, we might be able to, you know, get some semblance of a show. Okay. All right.
I'll be honest. The seamless hour is going to be the issue. It's going to be like, all right, we have 20 minutes left and Donovan hasn't gone yet. So we're going to be here for another extra 20 minutes after. And
gotta wrap that up. Wrap it up. Okay. Right. All right. All right. So. But, you know, so does anyone remember what we're doing? Does anyone remember their plot, what they're talking about on this episode?
Yes.
I don't. Do anyone know why we're all here? Do you guys remember?
To talk.
Why are any of us here?
All right. See, Reinhold, we're not doing that. We're going to go down that round hole with you.
We're not going down there?
No, we're not doing that with you. Okay.
Not until we start talking about Steins Gate. It's fine.
Doing a 4-hour stream tonight?
No 4-hour Monday night stream. When we start streaming on Friday nights, yes. Let's start doing a 4-hour Friday night stream. Okay. How about that? How does that sound to you, Reinhold? Does that sound good to you?
Hey. Whenever, man. I'll take 4 hours whenever I can get it.
We'll start at 8 o'clock on a Friday and go 4 hours all the way to midnight. Would that sound good?
Just go till our voices just give out on us.
It'll be midnight.
See how long it can go.
For you, maybe. It'll be like, all right, so that was the fifth arc of One Piece. And now let's talk about the sixth arc.
Anyway, so
in this lobby,
Loki Wall is working on a project for it now. The project we're working on is the media that shaped us. It came to my mind of trying to do something to do like the anime or things that I said that shaped me, a lot of my opinions. And I brought that idea to Vincent. He took the idea, ran with it, expanded upon it. So I decided to get the entire cast and crew to get, well, as much as people I can to come up with the exact same thought and bring out different media that help shape their opinions or basically touch them in some way. And so you can just get better to know like the cast and crew, the people around the things are just, you know, let us talk about different media that we enjoy, because how often you get to really just discuss the media. Now, none of this is meant to be a book report or, you know, and there's potential spoilers ahead on everything that we talk about. So if you don't like spoilers, then grow up. Everything's got a spoiler on it. Learn to enjoy media. What?
That's fair. That's fair. Yeah. I mean, I get it. That's fair.
Yeah. Grow up. And if there's too many spoilers, you know what? We have the spoiler tag. It'll give you a spoiler warning. If there's always going to come, we'll say potential spoiler. We're watching it live on the video. There'll be a spoiler banner on the bottom. So you get a benefit for watching it live or just watching the video versus just listening to the podcast. So benefit, just benefit, small benefit. And we're going to give it away because if we charge you for it, you probably would listen to it. So anyways.
Sorry, I'm just a little distracted by the TV screen behind you.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It's like somebody's playing Madden. What the heck?
Oh, that's someone's soul dying behind me. That's
them reviewing the Madden and how it's terrible. That's what that is.
Yeah. You might be seeing what is considered the Angry Joe Show on his annual review of Madden, which I feel bad for him because he's been holding the torch of how bad this game has become. So I feel like a need to watch it because he suffered so for us to have this information. So I will suffer and watch and laugh and
suffer listening to him. Right.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. So it's pain. Yeah. So what we're bringing out today is talking. So the media, we're going to, like, Ryan Hall's going to do Bare Naked Ladies. I'm going to do Ghost in the Shell, and Vincent's going to do Steins Gate. And he's getting ready to really, like, you know, he is gnawing at the bit. So Vincent, do you want to go first?
I mean, I can.
Yeah. Why don't you set us up? So start us off.
Yeah. One sec. I'm a little thirsty.
Are you thirsty? Thirsty?
Oh, he's gonna get that throat going real scratchy.
The ambrosia of the gods. A little ASMR for you. Reinhold, where's your ambrosia? Reinhold, we talked about this bit. We talked.
It's fine.
Wow.
Steins Gate, for me, was when I first watched it, it was at a point where I actually could understand the anime and media at the time. Because before Steins Gate, I'd watched mostly the Toonami stuff of like Dragon Ball Z and Naruto and all that stuff that was showing at that time. And of course, I watched Cowboy Bebop, but I was way too young to understand the spiritualism and all of the social commentary of Cowboy Bebop because I was like 13 and didn't know any better, to be honest. But I watched Steins Gate when I was probably about 17 or 18, and then I was at a point mentally where I could start to understand a lot of the aspects of the anime that is much more in depth besides just, oh man, two action figures smashing together and it looks cool. So
you didn't like that.
I mean, I enjoyed it, but it's more of this. Steins Gate was the first one that actually caused me to think in depth about the story and the narrative and everything that's happening. Steins Gate, the premise is the most shorthand version. A group of outcasts figure out how to send messages back in time. And when they send messages back in time, it changes history, but only the main character, Okabe, remembers that they've changed the time. And all the changes that happen to the world, only Okabe remembers it happening. Up to a point where they meet a convergence moment that will always happen, and he has to figure out how to revert all of the changes they made in the past to prevent that convergent thing from happening.
Does Okabe have like some like superpower that makes him do that?
Well, I mean, technically he does because he's the only person that remembers being able to switch lines, which he purposely calls Reading Steiner because he's a Chunibyo, which for those who aren't familiar with anime and stuff, Chunibyo is a term for like eighth grade mindset of somebody who basically who basically plays pretend, but as a personality. So Okabe's alternate personality is the mad scientist showing Kyoma who always wears a lab coat, as Harry so eloquently decided to wear for the past two episodes, which wasn't explained last time because we never got to this point.
They're very comfortable. Only like the greats have their
you know, coats on. It's my shield. Keeps me safe.
But the themes and the fact that dealing with the consequences of your actions and what are you willing to give up to get what you desire is a massive element of the entire story, because they start willy-nilly changing the past without thinking about any of the consequences of their changes. And when they get to the convergent point, which I'll get to in a minute, that convergent point basically wakes Okabe up of, oh my God, we've changed the past so much that this thing will always happen. And I need to figure out how to prevent this thing from happening again and again and again. And even if that means ripping away the joy and happiness of all of his friends that he allowed them to experience by a single change in the past. And with that, there's a single the character I want to talk about that embodies it is a character named Ruka. So when you meet Ruka, I will say that since it was made in 2010, it's a little problematic with Ruka because, you know, Ruka is a male that looks very effeminate. So when they first meet Ruka, Okabe basically goes through a whole spiel of how Ruka is basically the perfect woman, but he's a boy. That he fits all the types of what you would want in a woman, but he's a boy. And that's what prevents him from seeing Ruka in any romantic way. But Ruka, because has a very effeminate build, people constantly treat him like a female, even though he's a male. To the point where his parents make him wear a shrine maiden outfit instead of like a shrine priest outfit because his family runs a shrine, so he has to dress like he has to wear the female clothes instead of the male clothes. In the visual novel game, you find more about his past, the fact that his older sister basically used him as a dress-up doll and forced him to wear these female clothes because she wanted him to and was bigger and stronger than he was, so forced him to wear it anyway. And the character Mayuri, who loves cosplay, constantly wants him to wear this female character's cosplay because she thinks it fit him perfectly. So when he finds out they can keep changing things in the past, he asks them to send a message back to his mom to make him a girl by using the myth that when a woman's pregnant, if she eats more veggies, she'll have a girl, and if she eats meat, she'll have a boy. And it was a myth that was widely believed for a while. So they convinced her, and then he changed the world line of which Ruka is now a female. And it is great for Ruka because Ruka got what she wanted, but you can also tell that it was that dysphoria and that feeling of being accepted was forced upon her by her family because they basically saw him as a girl. And when they have to go back and revert the change of Ruka being a girl back to a boy, it's so devastating to watch Ruka have to come to terms with this change. Spoiler warnings at this point, I'm going to just put it out there. So one of the main reasons Ruka wanted to become a female is because Ruka is gay. And has a gay romantic feelings for Okabe, which puts in context the whole thing at the beginning of Okabe saying that he would date Ruka if he was a girl. And all this build up that this gag actually had way more weight to it because Ruka felt that same way to him, but he felt that, especially since it was 2010 and Japan has a whole thing about homosexuality and it's rough over there. He felt he could only be accepted if he was a girl for his feelings. And the reason he even had feelings for Okabe was when he interacted with Okabe for the first time. Okabe basically saved Ruka from all these prying otaku who was trying to force him to take pictures, and he didn't want to. And Okabe is like, it doesn't matter if you're a boy or a girl. You're you. You're a person. It doesn't matter. So these people should just leave you alone and let you live your life. Mm-hmm. And when they convince Ruka to go back to being a male, she starts having a breakdown, which she's talking about. If I knew it would hurt so bad to give this up, I would have never done it in the first place. Mm-hmm. And as she's changing, she tells Okabe, can you please remember me like this instead of me as a boy? And them having to rip away this moment of acceptance for Ruka and her own being to go back to being a boy just to prevent the convergence from happening is, in essence, the how they treat all the characters in the show. Every character has a moment or a part in the story that is strictly about how all of this is affecting them and them willingly ripping away their joy to prevent the convergence from happening, which happens to be Mayuri, who's Okabe's best, his closest friend, his oldest friend, who he basically saved from even ending her own life, gets killed. And he keeps trying to reset time and prevent that from happening over and over and over again. At one point, he's talking to a character named Karisu and tells her that he's relived Mayuri's death hundreds of times, and he's already growing numb to seeing her die. And he's been trying so hard by himself because nobody else can remember it happening. And the weight that puts on his psyche and him dealing with all of the facts that he gave everybody what they wanted, but in order to save their friend, he has to rip it all away. And it becomes even more of an issue when he realizes that the first time he changed time was when he witnessed a character dying who he became friends with later. And he has to let that friend die to save another one. And if he's willing to choose which friend to live and which friend to die. And this is all wrapped around this core of the beginning of, you get to understand these characters and they're silly and wacky. And one guy likes is an otaku, and one character is a girl who wears a maid outfit and wears cat ears and goes nyeh all the time.
Yeah, yeah. Ferris is the best. If you feel like watching the show, watch it for Ferris. Ferris too. Okay. Which, you know. Like, Ferris is like, yeah.
Her whole thing is dark as well. It's really sad.
They're all dark.
Everything is concerned is dark and sad. And they also, but it also shows that the consequences of your actions and dealing with it. They also go out of their way, especially with the knowledge they had in 2010, to try to be as roughly scientifically accurate as they can be, with, even though most of it's kind of mostly theory that they elaborate massively on for no reason. Because like using the Hadron Collider to make black holes that allows you to send information back in time.
Yeah.
It's a little extreme, a little ridiculous, but they try to use as much actual theory to make it work, even though it's still science fantasy for most part.
Correct.
Because their time machine's a microwave with a cell phone attached to it.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. But you've got to give something up because like time travel just doesn't exist currently.
Exactly.
Or will never exist. I have to put that cap in because Ryan Hose is like,
yeah.
Time travel will never exist, and then he'll go to like a 30-minute spiel on why it won't exist. Look at him; he's already teed it up.
but not just the narrative of Steins Gate. It also, as a show, it shows the ability of the medium of animation to create moments that are so distinct from anything else you can do on television or on movies or anything else.
Yeah.
Because Steins Gate has a sequel series called Steins Gate Zero that comes after the original series. So when Steins Gate Zero was coming out like 7 years later, they did a marathon of Steins Gate, of the first series on television leading up to the premiere. And then in episode 23 of 24, they changed the ending leading into the sequel. A moment that's supposed to go left goes right, and it leads directly into the sequel, changing the entire context of the end of the series. And it's seamless because they use the same animation style. They have the same voice cast coming back for the sequel. So they're able to create a moment that is so distinct for animation, because it's really hard to do with living, breathing humans, because after a show's over, they're going to grow older. They're going to get new jobs. They're going to do other things. If you want a case in point, look at the first Joss Whedon Justice League, where they had to CGI Superman's mustache off, and it looks terrible because he couldn't shave it off because he was doing Mission Impossible, and it was in his contract. He had to have a mustache. But it just shows how the medium can be used in ways that's so distinctly unique to animation. Because not everything can just go, well, we decided that we're going to do a new Star Trek series, and we're just going to end an episode of The Next Generation by reshooting the end of it and leading to a sequel series. Because all the people have grown older since the end of The Next Generation, so it's hard to just be able to go, all right, we're going to hire everybody back, make sure they look exactly the same, and let it ride. Because, I mean, look at all the modern stuff that Disney's trying to do by de-aging people. It doesn't really look good either.
Looks great on Paul Rudd.
Kurt Russell didn't look too bad in Guardians of the Galaxy 2, but we're also talking about Picard is out there as well for after Next Generation. So
yeah,
but didn't try to make him look younger. They just
They didn't reshoot the ending of The Next Generation and lead it directly into Picard.
They did actually try to shoot some scenes that were in the past with with Data.
Mm-hmm.
So Brent Spiner had a lot of work to makeup and stuff like that to make him look younger at the time or whatever, because he's aged. So he's got to still, because he's an android, he has to look the same no matter what, right? Exactly. So they have to do a lot of work on him there. So,
and it's one of those things that's that imagine them have to do that for all the cast members, because that scene had over half the cast in it. So it's one of those. It's very unique to animation, being able to take an ending of a series and just go, no, we're doing something else now.
Yeah. Which is like, yeah, it's the power of animation, is like that. The ability to just keep going and do different things. It's the thing that WB's, like their DC animated series, which why it's phenomenal. Like Batman the Animated Series was phenomenal. So the fact that it stretched upon the series, and it's Batman didn't age. He was just kind of ageless, but he could go on with these fantastic stories that keep happening, versus if this happened and, you know, like he would look like young Christian Bale, but by the end he would be old Ben Affleck.
Right. And I just really enjoy Steins Gate as a story. They do a lot of heavy lifting after the first couple episodes, because they spend the time to really let you see how these characters normally live their lives before you start tearing them down and seeing all the trauma behind their eyes that they've been hiding this whole time, and watching one man slowly lose his mind, realizing that he has to ruin the hopes and dreams of all the people he cares about to save one person.
As they're also discovering things about them, because like, and they get glimpses of what's going on around him. They care about their friend, but the moment he jumps back in time, they forgot.
Yeah.
Because
he's the only one that remembers.
Right. Because it doesn't happen to them, which is have to be the worst, because like, and oh, the end, which is great, is because Christina always helps him no matter which timeline he jumps into or where he's at. You know, she's always there like, yes, I will help you. Yes. Let's go do this. I believe you. Let's do this.
And it's, there's a lot of heaviness to it. There's a lot of imagery that shows up at random that is, that can be very dark because they literally have to kill a, like an 18 year old over and over and over again, who is the most innocent and pure character of all the rest of them, who really is just there because her friend is there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that part of the series. Like, just promise me you'll never use the shower here.
Yeah, there's a bunch of humor, but it's also very dated because they use like at channel to like to research stuff. And they reference a bunch of like old memes that were popular in 2010.
Yeah.
And stuff like that.
Those memes still hold up.
Yeah, but it's still.
Oh,
but
yeah, still. Yeah. The older it gets.
You can definitely feel how dated it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fine. So, yeah. A quick question. Is the attraction and the meaningfulness of this show to you just the fact that it was your first foray into higher thought fiction, or was there something about the story itself that really spoke to you?
It was a combination of the concept of this is the first anime that I felt like I emotionally like understood, being at a mature enough age to understand the emotional narrative parts of it. But also I really enjoyed and emotionally connected with watching somebody struggle against fate. Basically watching Okube struggle against what he knows is inevitable over and over and over and over again, and watching himself fail and not give up about it. And even with that moment he was ready to just throw in the towel, the one person he still trusted in him helped him work himself through it. It's very much the emotional journey that Okube goes through, and the fact that by itself isolated, Steins Gate has a very great narrative that helps you go through and deal with all these other people's emotions. But with the on top of it, with the sequel series, Steins Gate Zero, it follows a different path of science and stuff they're dealing with. And it falls more into Okube dealing with the trauma of him doing these things, him watching somebody he cared about die, and him basically losing all of his spirit and motivation for almost anything. And watching him deal with the trauma of it. For me, that's what it really boils down to. Just it's the narrative itself is very powerful, and watching Okube's journey, even though there's a bunch of other stories of fighting against fate, it's very distinctly different than other ones because you can tell how powerless he really is. That no matter, he can't just punch the issue and it goes away. He can't pull out a lightsaber and fight his way through it. He has to think through it. He has to figure out what is his friend's deepest desires, and can he emotionally deal with the consequences of removing those desires from those people?
Yeah. Because, that was the one thing that, he didn't just do it for them, because he had the power, too. Like, you know, I'm just going to do this thing.
Right.
But he made them do it.
Right. They basically had to agree to change the past. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't do it if they didn't agree to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Okay. Huh. Yeah. Yeah. Which spoiler? Also, I've watched the series. I've gone through it because I had to do the Japanese subtitle, and then I had to do the American voice actors, and also the exact same with Steins Gate Zero. Steins Gate Zero was pretty rough to get through because it was like tearing back at the wound that you thought healed over from watching Steins Gate.
Steins Gate Zero is so rough because it's dealing with AI a lot more, and what is a person.
Yeah.
When you have somebody's memories saved into a computer, do they, are they still the same person?
Yeah.
Because that's the person that you knew, but they can't have new memories. They can't build new things from the past that you shared with them. Yep. And him dealing with all the trauma. That too. That's also a thing.
Yeah. Hmm. Okay. So yeah,
Turn the floor over to you guys because I probably talked for more than my allotted time.
It's fine. Like I said, not in the book report. We just wanted to, you know, we just want to get that, like, the thing that, like, thing, and why it got to you, why it affected you, why are you, you know, and why did you, you know, feel like it's enough to share with the group? So,
right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. So,
let Harry go next.
Right. Ryan, do you want to go next? Is this?
No, you go ahead. No, you had to go next. I've got a topic that I could go on for a while about, or I can shorten it up if needed. So let's let you go, then we'll see where we're at on the time.
Ryan's like I need the hard stop.
If you let me go now, you may not have time to. Get a word in. So,
Reinhold, make
sense. Trust me, Reinhold. If I really wanted to, me and Harry could have a back and forth conversation about Steins Gate for the next 4 hours.
Yeah.
That could be the 4 hour stream.
4 hours.
Just stream. Us talking about Steins Gate and Steins Gate Zero.
All right. So, my assignment for this one, the one I bring to you, is the cyberpunk anime and manga Ghost in the Shell. Ghost in the Shell, the anime movie that I watched, the OVA, really did affect me a lot growing up as a kid, because it was like, just like Donovan, when you first saw your first like anime, was like this whole like just affected you. It affected me too. Like I was like, I didn't know animation could go into that type of direction, and coming into it, like I really did enjoy, like I didn't realize how much I enjoyed the cyberpunk genre. Granted, like I kind of got into it, you know, watching like some of the, like more of the other live action American stuff, but I think the animated Japanese stuff, that's what really pulled me in. And Ghost in the Shell had that for me. And it, the reason why I enjoyed Ghost in the Shell and went, because it gave interesting like philosophy and talking about different aspects of different like things of classical literature, and brings up a lot of the, it's one thing I like to pull from, where I have a lot of my concerns and why I do different things I do. So I'm going to go fast forward to the animated TV show for Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex. Standalone Complex follows the tales of the infamous hacker, the Laughing Man. Okay, so Laughing Man basically hacked from this bio firm who had this vaccine for a disease, and they were hacking him because he apparently uncovered something about their vaccine and what was going on about it. So the cast and characters of Ghost in the Show, like our heroes or protagonists of the series, was this small public security section 9. That's what they call themselves. And it's filled with ex-military cyborgs, police people that's working like undercover for the that used to infiltrate the Yakuza in Japan. And so they basically had this, you know, people pulling from different expertise, but made a cohesive team of 8 people that was, you know, worked in the shadows and tried to keep the peace in Japan, making sure the government stayed up and up, make sure kill that corruption and any other threat that happened out, you know, inside. Well, they got brought the case of the Laughing Man after some certain resurgences, because what was going on inside of Ghost in the Shell is a lot of people do this thing where they get cyberized. Cyberizing is basically when you get rid of your human body and you get basically a cybernetic one. So you basically get inside of a robotic shell or a ghost inside of your shell. Get it? Your ghost. Humans have ghosts, and when they get cyberized, they have a ghost inside the shell of their head case. Get it? Anyways, and the first movie dealt with the idea of if information and AI gather together enough, can the artificial intelligence and stuff like that, can it actually have a artificial ghost? Does an artificial ghost work? And they dealt with that in the first one, which is the reason why that stupid Netflix one just ticked me off. Anyways, but we'll get that one. Ghost in the Shell standalone complex dealt with the vaccine versus nanites dealing with an issue that came with being cyberized, called cyberate, what they call cybernetic sclerosis, basically the hardening of the brain from being cyberized. Some people would have this rare disease, this defect that was happening, and they had a basically this nanite thing that they would deal with. It's basically just keep you addicted. You would just keep buying this drug, and you always had to keep paying for it and keep going on. But someone did develop a vaccine. One shot, you're done, you're cured, you're gone, you're good, right? But that was suppressed because the organization really wanted it. Remember, cyberpunk dystopia, just because it resembled you, the real world, too bad. Welcome to cyberpunk dystopia. You know, the bad guys are everyone. But there's also, but as the Section 9 was uncovering a lot of these things, they're also becoming like that the people in the government, like they were finding out some people in the government, as only they were suppressing this and getting money from this organization, they were also getting the vaccine, getting, make sure their family got the vaccine, was on the vaccine trials. Well, and that's when the government was finding out the Section 8 was onto the case and was going after them. So like the and so government, they're also getting attacked by government corruption, having to deal with the politics on, we have these government officials that are doing bad, we've caught them, but they have so much power in the government. How do we arrest them? How do we go after them? We can't really go after them. Even though we've got them dead to rights, we've got more power in the government. We'll say anything. We'll do all kinds. We'll never make it there. This thing won't make it to trial. So they are having to also find different political ways to get around those pitfalls of going after someone high in power. Even actually at one point of time, having to, spoiler alert, fall on their own sword and make themselves look like the bad guys in order to get the prosecutors to pursue a case so they could go around and around and get all the other corrupt political officials, which like I said, like, it's, you know, but the other thing, which also like the other themes of, because it had some other episodes that it went in around the same old complex thing, it also deal with also some of the backstory, where this episode called Mean, basically dealing with copies without an original, or the standalone complex Meme. So basically you had all these people copying and mimicking something that just never existed. It doesn't have an original, but people were copying, mimicking the exact same thing. yeah, like I said, it's a blast show to watch, but it also comes down, but it was really got me with it, is the thing that really, that helped deal with the case, with dealing with the government and getting all this down, was that everyone had hackers on their side going different things. But what really got them was some people inside were printing documents out. The physical data rolls, what they couldn't hack, that were set in documents. And is what those physical data logs, which someone didn't account for or think about picking up, that is the pitfall with the government. Someone built it and printed the log out and put it in the archive, and no one went to get it because it's paper. And eventually someone just said, like, wait a minute, someone prints this out. And they went there and got the paper documents. And that's where, at the end of the series, the end of Standalone Complex, where they find the hacker, the Laughing Man hacker, at when he finally shows his physical self, is that he's sitting there in a library. So he sits there and he produces a physical library. So you're talking about a cyberpunk future dystopian world where everything is cyberized, everything is digital, and he maintains a library of physical print paper worth articles are written and put on paper and put on shelves. And it speaks to me personally, especially some guy with a server in his house, it speaks to me to having physical media and having different things, because if a digital on a cloud or connected to the internet, if someone can hack your systems or physical like that, they can edit it and change that. Yes, you can like scribble in a book, but you have to put a post in and scribble it up and update a book. And that's why like I'm a huge proponent for owning something physical and physical in my hand. I know I'm going to sound like Reinhold here. Like, yes, I like having things. As you can see, like I have a bookshelf. This is, you know, a physical book. So I continue buying new books in buy physical books, or if I have a piece of data, I like to download it and store it locally and have things run locally, because I want to physically control it. I want to have it, because if anything happens for it, well, you can't change what I have. During this, like, these past election cycles, we've watched websites put up fake news, then self-edit it. And it's only for certain Wayback Machines and sites or people who've gotten archives that you can actually sit back and realize this news article was edited stealthily. No one noticed it. They put out one thing, but 5 minutes later, changed the article. And if you just read it that first time, you know, and didn't come back for the corrections, the edits, you have no idea what's going on. And we're not talking about full on headlines, which it to me like always beckons back. Like, all right, I kind of at that moment, you know, it's I really do miss a physical newspaper, because they're articles. Like, if they have to print a retraction, they have to literally print a retraction. They have to have the you know, I've got the physical paper. If you put fake news out in physical paper, I will always have the sheet of paper that show like you were fake news. You produced this fake piece of content, versus their website. Like, we can just edit it, or oh, change the URL. You can't find the site anymore. Ha 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 ha. And that's, you know, like back in the trenches of the Gamergate, that's where a lot of people learned how to do like pull anything archives, because screenshots can be edited, everything's can be edited, and unless things are opened up and seen live, it's, you know, everything can be fictitious, hacked, or changed on you. And yeah, and that's what to me, like Ghost in the Shell really pulled from me, is that whole idea of, in a world where everything could be changed and did on the fly, like the only thing you can really trust is something you can really hold in your hands. that's where, like, so, like, yeah, yeah. That's just standalone complex. yeah. But,
anyway. Hence why you wanted to talk about this when we were talking about the HBO Max removal of all the Cartoon Network stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's gone.
Never existed.
Removed it and swiped the internet of all that stuff, and yeah. Now nobody, the only people that remember are the ones that worked on it or who watched the show, and mm-hmm. There are a bunch of people that will never discover it because it's gone.
I know. It's almost like you can create another book like Fahrenheit 451 or something like that, like the temperature which data deletes. You know, got people like on memorizing like animated shows or shows that are in their heads. They just become TV shows.
And that's kind of what it comes down to with their current, how a lot of everything is done, where everybody wants it now. Mm-hmm. And also the ease of streaming compared to me going and buying a Blu-ray now, or DVD or VHS, or going as far back as you can find things.
Oh yeah.
It's the only places I see of any of the animated stuff that has Blu-rays or anime. And that's mm-hmm. because they make tons of money in Japan by selling the Blu-rays.
Mm-hmm.
Way too much money in Japan by selling Blu-rays.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It is strangely easy to get your Japanese fix on Blu-ray physical discs. It's really mm-hmm. hard to do any U.S. stuff for a lot of TV shows, because a lot of times they're never going to produce it as a DVD by quote unquote official release. The official release just doesn't exist. If you want to get that content, you have to
put on the other hat, hoist the colors,
and then you can get your release. Even though, like, you would go out and buy a physical release, I would get on the website of my choosing and buy it and bring it into me, but they won't let me. So,
Well, that's not always an option either, because there's a lot of shows that I want to get copies of, like, were one or two seasons long,
mm-hmm.
and the people who own the rights to them just don't feel like it's worth spending the money to put out the content. So I can't even get, you know, through alternate means, I can't even get copies of the stuff, because it just does not exist.
Yeah,
right.
You can't find it. It's not there. It's, you know,
It took us years to get WKRP in Cincinnati, because they put out a first season DVD.
Mm-hmm.
It was terribly received because they replaced all the music in it because they didn't want to pay for any of the rights. And it was badly edited. It wasn't even the original stuff. It was the modified for syndication edits mm-hmm. that took out scenes here and there of all the shows. Mm-hmm. So everybody complained about it. So they didn't put out anymore. And finally, a company called Shout Factory mm-hmm. got in there, did it right, got all four yeah. seasons going, mm-hmm. and put as much of the music as they could in there. There's still, you know, mm-hmm. problems with some of the stuff. People just didn't want to give up the rights. You know, the Stones were a big problem and some of those guys, but it's it was great that they did that, but not everybody gets that. And I'm waiting for, I'd like to see the new WKRP come out on DVD so I can watch it, but you can't find that anywhere. You can only find like little bits and pieces mm-hmm. of videotaped transferred to digital on YouTube. I mean, that's it. That's all you get.
Another great example was Evangelion. Mm-hmm. For a long time, it was in rights limbo, and it was hopping around from company to company, and they wouldn't let the original creator have it until yep. Netflix bought the rights to it and redid the dub themselves because Netflix bought the rights to it.
And how many movies and stuff, how many movies are out there that you're like, oh, I just want to watch the movie, and you go look in the streaming site and it's not available on yeah. any streaming site.
Yeah.
And then you go, then one day it's like, oh, it's available on Amazon. And you mm-hmm. have to rush and try to buy it so that you can have it in your database that you can watch, right? So, oh yeah, Max Headroom's coming back. By the way, they're bringing it back with Matt Frewer. So they're talking about that next year, I think.
But you're a Max Headroom fan, right?
Oh, Max Headroom, yeah. Shit! I'm a big Max Headroom fan.
I'm talking about so, like, do you want to know? Do you know what Max Headroom is?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right. I got this clip queued up, but I was gonna like.
Yes, and I also even know about the hack that they use. Where they use Max Headroom in the hack of the live broadcast? I know about that too. Come on.
Okay. All right. Sorry. Just, you know.
Rude.
It was technically before your time.
A lot of things were before my time.
Okay. All right.
Well, that came out when I was in college. So that was back in 85, something like that, when that came out.
Yeah. A lot of days before my time.
Okay.
Well, 85, I was -9.
Ooh. Spicy.
So.
Attacking Reinhold with emotional damage. And that's our sponsor, G Fuel.
Technically, I could be your grandfather, is what we're saying. That's good to know. Technically, I could be your grandfather.
But what's the wall network finally gets enough money, we can get it. Yeah, sitcom. You know, Vince starts writing sitcoms. You know, you can play his grandpa in a sitcom. It'd be great.
It'd be called "Get Off My Lawn."
Get off my lawn.
It wouldn't even be a sitcom. It'd just be a podcast of everybody on the Wall Network complaining about either the younger or older generation.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Probably. So basically, just like our chat.
Pretty much. Yeah, but with a laugh track. And 90% less offensive memes.
Well, our chat does have a laugh track in my head. I hear it as I'm reading.
All right. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. Anything else you want to talk about that for Harry?
What, for Ghost of the Shell?
Yeah.
Okay, now the second season goes to the show.
You're the one on the time limit, sir.
No. I will step down and relinquish my time to Reinhold in the presence of trying to get this into the somewhat of a nice tight hour.
Sounds like hour 15 to me, but you know, neither here nor there.
Tight. So we need to talk about tight when we're talking about Bare Naked Ladies, right? Is that what we're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So Bare Naked Ladies, in the context that I'm discussing, is the name of a sort of alternative rock band, I guess you would say.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to say. So but it's alternative rock. They started kind of in the early 90s in Canada. and they were what was considered quirky. They got their start, the first kind of claimed the notoriety by recording their first video on, I can't remember the name of the program, but it's basically, it was like, it was Speaker's Corner, I think was the name of it. But the Canadian Broadcast System had set up a, like a camera booth where you could go in and you could just record your thoughts for like a minute, and then it would save it. And then they would go through it and they decide if they wanted to air one, you know, somebody's thoughts, you know, something like an op-ed or something. So they decided to jump in the booth and record a song, and it got a bunch of airplay from that. And they ended up kind of breaking out. They were one of the first artists to sell a certain number of cassettes that they made themselves. You know how when you go to see some rock bands or getting started, they sell, hey, get our DVD, get our CD or whatever, right? They sold enough to get on the record charts and chart for it in Canada. So the thing about Bareng-Naked Ladies that I like a lot is they have irreverent humor in their songs, but they also have very serious topics that they go on about. And some of them are very, very dark in that regard. But the most important thing is that it's all very intelligently written. And an example of that is there's a song called When I Fall. And it's basically the story of a window washer who's washing the windows of the high rises, and he sees all the, you know, the rich people inside making their money, and he's out there. He basically says that his a crystal clear canvas is his masterpiece, because if it's, you know, that's how he looks at it. But he imagines falling off the building and says something to the, and the line is 9.8 straight down. So there's some science, 9.8 straight down. the Brian Wilson, a great song about Brian Wilson, where they talk about Pavlov's dog in there. Ring a bell and I'll salivate. How would you like that? Is the line. It's very, very intelligent. A song called Box Set that was put out was basically examining the box set craze that was going on at the time. You know, everybody was putting out their own box set. So he put out this box. He was talking about putting out his box set because he was the story was about the guy who had been around for so long that everybody just knew him for his one hit, even though he's done all this other work, and he's getting frustrated and angry about it. And he's like, you know, and but the song's kind of about his going through that process of dealing with it. But he starts listing off what's on each of the discs, and one of them was a dance remix, full nothing but dance remixes. another one was all new material, but his voice had gone because he had a cold, so they used a computer to try and make it work, and it sounds horrible, you know. So it's all these little joke things about how people were putting box sets together. It's a very good song. Songs about there's a song called Running Out of Ink where it's about somebody who's like had been writing music and was successful. And then now he's writing more music, but it's not as good. And he doesn't like it. He doesn't think it's as good. People are telling him it's not as good. So he's like considering himself running out of ink. He doesn't have the ability to do what he used to do. So that's a little bit of a fear there. Songs about war, songs about drugs. Just some really intelligent stuff. Even last year, they put out a new song off their latest album. They've been doing this for this long period of time, still going. And they put out a new song called "New Disaster," and it examines basically outrage culture. Like the news media cycle is just trying to get everybody up angry and mad and fighting with each other. It's like constantly sucking you onto the TV so you can't live your life because you're so engaged in the outrage. So it's kind of about that. And it's a really good song there. They also wrote the song for Big Bang Theory. You may have heard that theme song, which actually, if you listen to the whole song, is really good. There's some great lines in there, very intelligent lines in there about Australopithecus and stuff like that. It's very funny.
Funny is part of the whole show.
Now, we don't need that.
Nerd reference.
I have a love hate. I have a love hate relationship with Bernie with Big Bang Theory, but that's not sorry. The unfortunate thing with Bare Naked Ladies is that one of the founding members left the group after some issues, so he's no longer with the group and writing and everything. So I think some of their quirkiness has gone away because of it. But they still do some great stuff, and they really tackle some good topics, and they do it in a very irreverent manner. So it's fun to listen to. It tackles hard, difficult issues a lot of the times, sometimes not. Sometimes it's just pure comedy. They have a song called King of Bedside Manor, which is hilarious. Their live shows are incredible. I don't know if you ever – it's the only live show that I've ever seen was better and more entertaining was Weird Al. Because Weird Al puts on a show.
That's fair.
Right. So that's entertaining. But they come out and they sound awesome. They take breaks in between the songs to do raps and make up little things back and forth, these little call and answer things that they did all the time. The funny thing is that they're one of the first bands who have done a lot of things. Like they had the first video for one of their songs made by YouTube stars. Now that was done later by what was the name of the band? Radiohead, right? Weezer did that too.
Where they literally just took a bunch of memes and shoved it in a music video.
Yeah, but this was actually like they got like Kona and all these people who are like the original OG YouTube guys were actually filming bits that went into the song. So it was like a video of them doing things. So they did that. They had a contest for making a fan video to a song. And if yours was picked, you got to be into the official video. And the guy who won the official video ends up running through, like, I think supposedly naked through this thing. So it was kind of fun for that. There were a lot of good fan stuff that came out of that. Then there are when I went to go see him a concert years and years ago, before the split, they were selling CDs of that concert, not like a CD of the concert that they're doing this concert and this is a CD with all the songs on it. They would record this song. They record the show through the mixer, pump it to a music file, and you could buy it and download it and have it. So whichever show you saw, you could get that one. It was really good. So, and the one I went to go see had Alanis Morissette as a guest. So they came out and sang a song together at the end. It was such a great night because they were really good together.
That's awesome. So, probably high, better quality than what everyone does with their stupid phone that no one's going to watch
again. Oh, it was they were recorded in lossless format. So you can download it in lossless.
More concerts should do this. This way we can shout at people, put your damn phone down and just buy the video afterwards.
This was just the audio. It wasn't the video, but still it's like you can have all your music right on the, it sounded good because it's like, they sound good in concert. I mean, I've been to a couple of their concerts and no matter where you're sitting at in the concert, it sounds as good as the record.
It just hit me. Lossless format? Are you serious?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Big old files, but it was lossless.
Oof, go home with that disc. Time to break out the good headset.
I got it on my computer. I can listen to it. It's such good. It's such a good thought process. And this was... God, what was it 15 years ago? Mm-hmm. when they were doing that. So they were really on the cutting edge of doing that sort of thing, right? And so they broke out of the record company and started their own production company, and because they got tired of dealing with all that stuff. So they get a lot less, you know, promotion and everything else for the years, but they still have a good following, because once you kind of get into Bare Naked Ladies, you don't want to stop. It's like something that you carry for the rest of your life, because it's so smart, so funny, and such a good time, where a lot of the music that I see, you know, even in the 80s was like this, and 90s, but even, and especially now, it's just, it's mindless, right? It's all about the beat. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, that's fine and all, but I enjoy having my brain kind of tickled a little bit while I'm listening to the music and enjoying the beat.
Okay. So, Reinhold, if you had to pick like three songs to say your favorite, which ones would they be?
Probably Box Set, which is one of my favorites. There's a song called, and these are going to be non-hits. These are deep cuts. So there's New Disaster, there's Box Set, and the other one, what was it? I can't remember the name of it. It's basically the song about never, like, even if I had three wishes to change everything, I wouldn't change anything.
Yeah, I know someone you're talking about.
Because, yeah, so I can't, for some reason, the name escapes me, but yeah, they did the induction. They got put into the Canadian Rock and Hall of Fame. They got back together to perform at that event. They were inducted in by Geddy Lee, right? So, but they got on stage and it was all five members back again. They sang One Week and If I Had $1 Million, right? And I watched the interviews and them talking to each other for the first time in like 10 years. And it was really amazing to get into that and see that they were coming back together. There's a, if you really want to have some fun, before they kind of split, the two guys who were good friends, right? They kind of went different ways. But they did something called Bathroom Sessions on YouTube. Tonight and I Fell Asleep at the Wheel is such a good song, by the way. I love that song. But they did something called Bathroom Sessions. If you go on YouTube and you look them up, Bare Naked Ladies Bathroom Sessions, it's basically them in there. He's in there playing music. Stephen Page comes in every once in a while and they do a duet together. And some of them are very funny. Like there's one time where they're singing a song and it starts off with just the one singer, and then Stephen Page, right, like 30 seconds into it, walks out of the bathroom buttoning up his pants, and you hear the flush of the toilet. Sorry, right in the middle of the song. It's just they're having fun with it, but it's all acoustic redos of all their music, just to a video camera on YouTube. And that was, God, that had to be 14, 15, 16 years ago when he did that. So they're out there. You can watch them. They're very fun.
It's really interesting. Like I've known of Bare Naked Ladies because, you know, most people know of them, probably not as in depth as you do. But it was really weird that a couple years ago, their music video for "Death Say That Out Loud" was released by Rooster Teeth.
Like a what bunch was of the second, that was the second one by Rooster Teeth. The first one was Odds Are.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, Rooster Teeth did a bunch of their music videos just randomly. I was like, that's weird. Yeah, why are they on Rooster Teeth?
They got together with Rooster Teeth. Rooster Teeth was trying to do production. They hired Rooster Teeth to do them for him. Everybody liked each other. They're big fans of each other, right? The Bare Naked Ladies love Rooster Teeth. And Rooster Teeth love Bare Naked Ladies. So it was just a match made in heaven. And they made like four or five videos together. And it's because it's real funny because I love watching Rooster Teeth and watching Gavin be the star of that video, and then seeing all the little inside jokes that Rooster Teeth put into the video that most people would just have not gotten. But I see them and I'm laughing hysterically at every single one of them. It's funny. So that was fun to see that. So that collaboration. We're going long. I don't want to go too long.
Anything you want to add?
I could start reading off the lyric sheets if you wanted to. There's a song about there's a song about a group of people who are dealing with a failed bank robbery and how they're trying to get away, because when they went into the bank in mm-hmm. order to rob them, they found out that the place was full of nuns, and they just couldn't do it. they couldn't rob the nuns, so now they're trying to get away with the failed robbery, and everybody's running, and it's a hilarious song.
It's messed up. So it's like a Payday episode. Like, oh yeah, it's good.
Dude, there's nuns, we're supposed to be quiet. We're supposed to do this quiet.
There's a great song. So there's a couple of things about American Ladies. First of all, is there's always one song on every album that is really weird, but I always found that I liked it the best. There's one called Sell, 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 which is about, you know, an actor who was brought in to sell war to people, you know, that sort of thing. And then there's I Fell Asleep at the Wheel. That's another one that's kind of the weird one on this show. They really great at songs. They just, what I find is that they're really bad at bridges. They don't know how to do a bridge well. And it just really takes away some of the songs when they do these kind of weird little things in there to try to make the bridge work. But beyond that, there's actually the one that song they did, which is a waltz. That's basically, what did you do with the woman I love? Did you hide her away and kill her or something and take her place? Cause you're not that person. Right. So it's, this is like a guy realizing that his wife had changed and he no longer saw her the way she was. She's different now. And it's a really, cute little song. It's a nice waltz song, 3-4 time, but it's just stuff like that. I mean, they've got such great songs on all of their albums. It's really hard to pick even a top 10.
Well, we're at home. It is like, we're getting to that point. So like, if you had to pick one song, one Bareneck Lady song, you're like, if you got to listen to one,
mm-hmm.
what's the one song?
Brian Wilson.
Okay. All right. Well, you heard it here, folks. If you're going to, you know, when you wake up this morning and you just like, you know what, you need a song on in the shower, put it on, put some Bareneck Ladies on, listen to,
Brian Wilson. Brian Wilson, Get a Live Version. It's off there's a Rock Spectacle album. The live version is so good. And When I Fall is a great kind of counter to that too. So mm-hmm. Brian Wilson is just a really good feel. You know, and to the point where Brian Wilson mm-hmm. sings that song in his concerts.
Mm. I don't know who Brian Wilson is. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Brian Wilson is one of the Beach Boys. He's like the founding mm-hmm. member, the main driving force behind the Beach Boys. I've heard of them.
Yeah. I only heard of the Beach Boys because of the TV show Full House.
Brian Wilson was famous for having a emotional breakdown, basically. And it's kind of the song, the lyric is, it goes, I'm lying in bed just like Brian Wilson did. And it's about dealing with depression and stuff like that. It's really, really a well heartfelt song. I love it. Oh,
so perfect for the like early morning shower.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Right at your cry, right before the day go.
Oh yeah,
that cry going. That way you can mm-hmm. just refresh mm-hmm. yourself, so you can get ready to go to work.
Got the good cry going,
and yeah. not murder your coworkers.
Yeah, got the good cry. Got the good cry. It's the best thing about working from home. You know, coworkers can't watch you cry. All right, so before this gets too long in the tooth, Reinhold, I will say this: I'm not going to promise. I'm going to attempt one time before this year's up. We're going to do a long stream on a Friday night. I'm not saying which Friday night. Right, we'll make sure you know well in advance, so you make sure you're free.
We got to advertise it. We got to advertise it.
And we can advertise it. We'll see what we can also we can grab, and we'll do a
talk long... about it on the big show. We'll talk mm-hmm. about it on Hody show. We'll have him talk about it.
Honestly, if we go long enough on a Friday night, like Hody might be able to pop in on a late Friday night one. Like
we'll just video call him and pull him in without his without his consent, because that's the fun part, right?
Oh yeah. Just pull him in. Yeah, we'll just drop the link in there. Like, hey, we're gonna go long. Jump in, jump out. Who wants to come in?
It'll be Trisha fun. We'll get Trisha and Remzo on. It'll be fun.
Yeah, it should be fun. Yeah. All right. So no promises, but I will attempt.
So what are you picking for next episode?
Oh man! Look at what's on my list. I forgot.
I know you want me to pick.
What do you think I want you to pick?
I know what you want. You want me to say Initial D. Right?
I don't want you to say anything. if you pick Initial D, then the next episode is just going to be depressing. We'll just put it. Let's preface it that way. So, if you pick Initial D, I'm doing your line April, and this is going to be sad. Everyone's going to be sad.
Just like, I will make this sad. This will be so sad for you.
Initial D is the only anime on your list that isn't sad enough that we won't make an entire episode depressing.
All right. Then I think I will go back to Gundam then.
Okay, which one?
They're all so different, you're right, and I really have to like be very particular. And I think I'm going to talk about the one I really, really want to scream about and want to screech about, and get it off my chest. I think I'm going to do Gundam Wing.
That's fair.
I want to get this one off my chest. I thought about waiting for this one to really hold into this one, but like I can't. I can't hold it in anymore. I really want to do Gundam Wing.
That's fair. Then I'll do Sayonara Zetsubou Sensei.
The what?
I'll talk about it.
Okay, that's good. Let's get about it.
And if anybody's interested,
of course,
what I'll be doing is timely. We'll do the Kids in the Hall.
Nice.
Okay.
Since they just had their sixth season release this year, so
excellent.
Which, when I first saw that, like, Kids in the Hall is back, I was like, what, are they just redoing the shows? Oh, they're making a new season.
Oh, what? Oh, Jesus.
And they very first sketch tell their fans that they aren't screwing around and to expect anything, because you end up with full frontal from two of the guys.
Oh my god.
We're not on TV anymore. Let's go.
Because the bit said, well, you know, is they're robbing a bank. We shouldn't probably get into it too much, but they're robbing a bank. Because it's funny. And they're like, oh, we're gonna do, they're gonna catch us. Because yeah, but they're looking for two guys who wear clothes. We're not wearing any clothes, they won't know it's us. So they take all they realized, and they said when they were writing this sketch that they realized they kind of had to do it. They couldn't just kind of fake it, and they were kind of thinking about, you know, surreptitiously putting things in the way and doing this. Like, and they said, no, we're the Kids in the Hall. We're going to do it. And they did it.
We're just going to do it. Okay. All right. This one should be fun. It should be fun. Yeah. So next Monday, next Monday is Labor Day.
I mean, I'm still okay with that. I have nothing better to do, dude.
Yeah, I'll be fine. I'm fine.
That's fine.
It might even be better because I won't have like work all day and be tired on my mind. So it'll be fine.
Right. Yeah. I won't have work all day. So yeah. I sleep in. By sleep in,
do some reading.
Yeah, by sleep in, I mean 6 a.m.
By sleep in, he means 4:45.
So bring up New Disaster and let's take us out on that. We'll just end the show with a whole Bare Naked Lady song.
That's called copyright, Dragster.
Are you trying?
You get 8 seconds.
Let's not do that.
Okay.
Have you not been watching?
No fun.
Restriction to monetize saga happening on YouTube right now.
No. I do want to push the envelope and actually like post clips of some of the shows that we have, right? Especially like after watching like Angry Joe, like the Angry Joe filter over like the clips, so we actually like play the clips. You know, and just have the requirement like there has to be no music on it, and you've got like. You've got 8 seconds. Play the clip. Do it. It's all you get. It's going to have this filter over.
Oh, God. It's going to be so good.
Yeah, I thought about, like, just, like, let's push it. Let's see what's going to happen. What's the worst thing, you know? Yeah.
Worst well, we could do stills, right? We could do still pictures.
Oh, yeah. So, this. Yeah. Yeah. But, like, some of us are doing motion. Out of the stuff that Vince and I do are motion. Okay. All right. I know a lot of your things is music.
Sort of.
Which is, like,
so, well, yeah,
instant copyright.
But yeah, it's like
immediate copyright.
No, but there's videos. I can show a picture of the video so you can see the people, what the guys look like or something, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't have to play the song.
Yeah.
Love to. I'd love to be able to do a podcast where I could just play music and talk about it. But there's not a lot of them out there doing that because it's hard because you get hit a lot.
Now, if you want Ryan Hold, Weird Libertarians R&D department, we can make our own streaming servers that we can do whatever the heck we want over there.
True.
What happens when they go after your internet provider and you get your three strikes?
Well, that's the thing, sir. they've got to fight me. They'll find the cloud server. They can find the cloud server, but I bought that cloud server with Bitcoin, so good luck.
and you're using onion router, right?
No. I mean, yeah. There's not enough people in my neighborhood to use Tor. I moved to an area which I like, but like no one here uses Tor. It's really hard to get. So like every time I boot up Tor, like everyone, I'm not. Target, because no one in this area is a Tor. Yeah, that's the best thing about being in the city. You could probably cope someone around you is using Tor. And that goes a shout out to all you people out there. If you're not using Tor randomly, you should just turn Tor on just randomly. Just turn it on. Leave it on. Just do something. Got a computer on the side. Just put Tor on it. Put it off to the side. Anyway, that's enough of this before this gets too long in the tooth. All right. I'm going to wrap this sucker up. So you know what we're doing next week. It's going to be Labor Day. You'll be off all day. You know, crack a beverage. Listen to us at 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. And as we go through all this, as we hit the classic, which we're doing Gundam Wing from Vincent and Kids in the Hall from Reinhold.
The English is goodbye, Mr. Despair.
Yeah, sure it is.
It really is.
Yeah, sure it is. All right. Everybody say goodbye.
Never.
Bye.